Welcome back to the Deep Dive. If you're a macadamia farmer in KwaZulu-Natal right now, you are facing something. Well, it's more than just the usual stress of farming. It's like a perfect storm of pressures.
It absolutely is. That's not an exaggeration at all. What growers in KZN are dealing with is this really complex mix of threats that are just squeezing margins from every single direction.
And it starts with the weather, right? The climate volatility.
Exactly. You have these intense, unpredictable droughts that can be really damaging. And then they're followed by extreme weather events, torrential rain, sometimes heat waves, and they always seem to hit at the worst possible time.
Right, during flowering or nut set, the most delicate stages.
Precisely. And while all that's happening, your input costs are just, well, they're going in one direction and it's relentlessly up.
Yeah, that's for sure. The cost of synthetic fertilizers, chemicals, herbicides, it feels like it's skyrocketing.
It is, and it's directly hitting profitability. Then you add on top of that the long-term issue of soil degradation. Years of conventional farming have, in some places, made the soil brittle, the trees less resilient.
So your yields get inconsistent.
Very. And then the final piece of the puzzle is the market pressure. You've got price volatility, global demand that shifts, and the constant threat of new tariffs. It all adds up to this systemic crisis where the old playbook, the expensive playbook, it's just not working anymore.
So basically, just relying on heavy chemical inputs to sort of mask the symptoms, that's not just unsustainable, it's becoming financially impossible.
It makes your whole operation structurally weak. You're demanding these constant, costly inputs just to, stand still. The goal has to shift. It's not about short-term survival anymore. It's about building fundamental, lasting farm resilience.
Building an immune system for the orchard, not just treating the cold.
That's a great way to put it. An
Yeah.
immune system that naturally lowers your costs over time.
So, what is the roadmap? What's the survival toolkit for a modern KZN macadamia grower who's hearing this and nodding along?
Well, today we're going to do a deep dive into the Region Mac Farms initiative. And you should really think of this as the essential knowledge hub. It's a resource designed to guide growers step by step away from those conventional methods and toward a data-driven, regenerative approach.
An approach that promises not just long-term health, but, and this is the critical part, dramatically improved profitability.
Through cost reduction and yield consistency, yes.
Okay, let's unpack that because this sounds like it's much more profound than just, switching out a spray program. This is a shift in philosophy.
It's a radical shift. You're moving away from generalized advice or just gut feeling, and you're starting to rely on hard, actionable evidence from your own farm.
Which brings us to the new mantra, the core principle.
We don't guess, we test.
We don't guess, we test.
That phrase is the absolute foundation of everything. It's how you turn a farm from this vulnerable, reactive consumer of expensive products into a scientifically managed, resilient, and proactive ecosystem. Every single investment has to be justified and measured.
All right, let's start by diagnosing the failure of that old system. You called it the spray and pray approach. Why is that model, which so many farmers have relied on for decades, suddenly so precarious?
Because it was always designed to treat visible symptoms, while leaving the root cause completely unaddressed. You see low vigor in the
You
trees.
throw on more NPK, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, the standard stuff.
Right. You see some pests, you spray a broad spectrum chemical. But these actions are based on what, a calendar or just what you did last year. They're not based on the unique real-time needs of that specific tree, that specific block.
So even if the soil is poor, dumping synthetic NPK might give you a temporary green flush, but it's not actually fixing why the plant can't get what it needs from the soil in the first place.
Exactly. And that leads to the overuse of costly inputs. The farmer is constantly overcompensating for an inefficient system. And worse, many of those synthetic inputs actually damage the microbial life in the soil.
The very life that's supposed to be driving long-term health and nutrient cycling.
It becomes this expensive downward spiral of diminishing returns. Your input bill just keeps climbing faster than your yield does.
Okay, so regenerative agriculture aims to reverse that spiral. It's about working with nature, not against it.
That is the core goal. You're building inherent resilience. But to do that properly, with precision, you need data. You have to move past assumption. And this is where the four complementary testing methods, the pillars of the Regen Mac Farms approach, become so important.
Let's define those pillars. So, pillar number one, the absolute starting point, has to be the soil analysis.
The soil analysis is the blueprint. I mean, without it, you are farming blind. And a good analysis goes much deeper than just NPK. It reveals your long-term health indicators.
Like essential minerals, calcium, sulfur, boron.
Yes, and your crucial pH balance, your organic matter content, which is really the engine of your soil's health, and the cation exchange capacity, or CEC.
Okay, let's pause on CEC. That's a highly technical term. For a farmer listening, how should they think about cation exchange capacity in just, you know, practical terms?
Think of CEC as the magnetic charge in your soil that holds onto nutrients. Clay and organic matter, they have a high CEC. They act like powerful magnets.
So they grab onto the good stuff.
They securely hold onto the positively charged ions, your essential nutrients like calcium, magnesium, potassium, and they prevent them from just washing away with the rain or irrigation.
So if your soil test comes back and it shows a low CEC?
Then you know instantly that any expensive fertilizer you're applying is likely just leaching straight to the profile. It's a waste. It tells you immediately that you need to invest in building organic matter to improve that nutrient retention.
Right. It makes the cost of that test immediately justifiable because it stops you from literally pouring money into the ground. Okay, so soil analysis tells us what's available in the ground. Now, for pillar number two, leaf analysis.
The leaf analysis is your first critical feedback loop. It tells you what the plant has actually managed to absorb and what it's using at that specific point in time.
And this is so important because there can be a huge disconnect, right? Just because a nutrient is in the soil doesn't mean the tree can actually get to it.
Exactly. And poor uptake often signals other problems. Maybe your pH is off, locking up nutrients. Mm-hmm. Or maybe there's an antagonistic ratio between two nutrients.
Like too much potassium blocking the tree from absorbing magnesium.
A classic example. So regular leaf analysis, say at key growth stages like pre-bloom and nut fill, lets you see how the plant's needs change through the season. And it allows for these really precise, timely foliar applications. You're only targeting confirmed deficiencies.
Okay, now this is where it gets really interesting for me. Pillar number three takes this real-time view to a whole new level. SAP analysis. You said a leaf analysis is like a historical snapshot, but SAP analysis is more like a live video feed.
It is. SAP analysis is the ultimate proactive tool. It gives you insight into nutrient movement and ratios inside the plant's circulatory system, the xylem and phloem.
And why is that so transformative?
Because it allows you to anticipate deficiencies before you see any visible symptoms. Mm-hmm. I mean, by the time a macadamia leaf shows chlorosis, that yellowing, you've already lost yield potential. That damage is done.
But a SAP analysis can show you that magnesium levels are crashing days or even weeks before the leaf turns yellow.
That's it. So it's not just a blood test. It's more like a predictive metabolic panel. You see an imbalance coming.
So what does the farmer do?
They intervene immediately with a highly targeted foliar spray. For instance, if the SAP shows a sudden drop in a mobile nutrient like potassium right during nut fill, you can apply a precise, fast-acting potassium foliar to keep that plant perfectly balanced during its highest demand period. It just eliminates so much waste.
And finally, pillar number four. This one looks beneath the surface at the microscopic support crew, biological analysis.
Right. We have to move past this idea that soil is just inert dirt. It's a living ecosystem. So a biological analysis assesses the microbial populations, the bacteria, the fungi, the protozoa, and it looks at their diversity and their activity levels.
And it basically answers the question, is all this regenerative effort I'm putting in actually working?
It does. It measures the effectiveness of your cover cropping, your composting, your reduced tillage.
Yeah.
If you've invested in making high-quality compost, this analysis should show an increase in beneficial microbial diversity. It confirms whether you are truly building health from the ground up.
So when you bring all this data together, the soil, the leaf, the sap, the biology, what's the most common problem that you see this integrated view revealing?
Often, it reveals a nutrient antagonism problem, not just a simple deficiency. So let's use that potassium-magnesium example again. Your soil test shows plenty of potassium and magnesium.
Okay, so on paper, everything looks fine.
Right. But your leaf test shows low magnesium uptake. And then your SAP test confirms, hey, right now, magnesium isn't moving through the plant. The diagnosis is suddenly crystal clear.
The high potassium in the soil is blocking the magnesium uptake.
Exactly. So the solution isn't to dump more magnesium on the soil, which would be a waste of money. The solution is the fast-acting foliar magnesium spray to bypass the soil problem. And then you can work on addressing that potassium imbalance in the soil long term.
That integrated view just allows for so much optimization. It minimizes the waste that is absolutely killing margins right now.
And that's the point. That's the transition that Regen Mac Farms is trying to facilitate. The cost of a few of these tests is tiny compared to the cost of one season's worth of wasted, excessive synthetic fertilizer. It's a no-brainer.
Okay, let's connect this idea of internal health directly to what might be the farm's biggest threat to profitability. Pests, we're talking stink bugs, and of course the macadamia nut borer, or MNB. These can just decimate a crop.
They can. And the conventional approach is, of course, purely chemical defense. But the regenerative philosophy argues that prevention starts with internal strength. It's about not being an attractive target in the first place.
The key idea here is that pests aren't just attacking randomly, are they?
Not at all. They're highly selective. And they're drawn to stress trees because they can detect something called volatile organic compounds, or VOCs.
So a stress tree is literally giving off a scent that acts like a dinner bell for insects.
That's exactly right. When a macadamia tree is under any kind of stress, whether it's from drought, a nutritional imbalance, whatever, it releases these specific VOCs, things like terpenes and aldehydes. They're basically chemical distress signals.
And pests have evolved to pick up on these signals to find an easy meal.
Mm-hmm. A highly stressed tree is just broadcasting a much louder, clearer distress signal, and that makes it a prime target.
So to stop broadcasting that signal, you have to mitigate the stressors. Let's talk about the specific internal factors. What nutritional imbalances trigger this VOC release?
The most critical ones are related to basic metabolism. Nutrient imbalances are huge. A classic one is low magnesium.
Because magnesium is at the heart of chlorophyll, right? Photosynthesis.
Correct. So when magnesium levels drop, photosynthesis slows down, the tree is under metabolic stress, and it immediately starts pumping out those VOCs. Low calcium, imbalanced boron, they can cause similar stress responses.
And then you've got the external stressors, the abiotic ones, often dictated by that harsh KZN climate.
Yeah, things like drought and excessive heat are obvious ones. They impair the tree's metabolic processes and drastically increase VOC emissions. But even something like a prolonged period of overcast weather
can cause stress because photosynthesis is disrupted.
The tree just can't produce enough energy. It's signaling weakness.
And then there are the self-inflicted stressors, the chemical ones.
Oh, yes. High salt fertilizers are a major offender. Macadamia is like a slightly acidic soil, and high soil salinity, often from using too many high salt synthetics, it just burns their sensitive shallow roots. That salinity stress immediately causes the tree to release VOCs.
And what about just planting trees too close together?
High density planting. It creates this fierce root competition for water and nutrients. That competition is a form of stress, and again, it triggers the release of those attractive VOCs.
So the farmer's mission is to keep the tree metabolically happy so it stops sending out the pest invitation. How do they actually quantify that internal happiness? Let's get into the proactive metrics.
Okay, so we use three critical metrics. We monitor them consistently, sometimes biweekly or even weekly during those crunch times like flowering and nut set. The goal is to achieve what we call a healthy profile, which means low vulnerability.
All right, let's detail the first and most important one, BRICS.
BRICS. This measures the total dissolved solids in the plant's sap. It's mostly sugars, but also minerals, amino acids. It's a direct measure of how efficiently the tree is photosynthesizing. A high BRICS reading is basically synonymous with a thriving, resilient, well-defended plant.
Can you elaborate on the mechanism there? How does high BRICS physically stop a pest?
It creates two barriers. First, high BRICS is correlated with the production of these complex natural defensive compounds, like phenolics and alkaloids. They make the plant tissue taste bad or even be toxic to pests.
Okay, and the second barrier?
The second, and this is critical, is osmotic pressure. The high sugar concentration makes the sap thicker, more concentrated. Pests, especially piercing and sucking insects like stink bugs, they physically struggle to suck it out. It's just too much work.
So it's literally too thick for them to drink easily. What are the target BRICS ranges that macadamia growers should be aiming for?
Well, the research shows that macadamias that are below 6 degrees BX are extremely vulnerable. They're basically screaming, eat me. So we want to aim for resistance levels. Mm-hmm. For a strong nut set, you're targeting 8 to 10 degrees BX.
And then higher as the nuts develop.
Yes, you want to climb to 10 to 12 degrees BX during that demanding nut fill stage. By maturity, you want the kernels themselves to be 12 to 14 degrees BX, and your healthy, mature leaves should be up at 14 to 16 degrees BX. When you're consistently above 12, most pests just, they move on.
So, a farmer does a test, finds low BRICS. What are the immediate targeted actions that Regen Mac Farms recommends?
The immediate reaction has to be boosting photosynthesis. so we recommend fast-acting foliar sprays rich in magnesium and manganese. We also use biostimulants like seaweed extracts to kickstart that metabolic activity.
And what about in the soil?
In the soil, you have to make sure your key drivers are balanced: calcium, potassium, boron, and zinc. And one key strategy for KZN with its climate volatility is applying chelated silica.
How does silica help?
Silica doesn't directly raise bricks, but it hardens the plant's cell walls. It makes the tree much more tolerant to abiotic stresses like heat and drought. So it basically prevents the bricks from crashing when the weather turns bad.
Okay, metric number two, electrical conductivity, EC. This measures salt and nutrient concentration, and we need to look at it in both the soil and the plant.
Right. Starting with soil EC, this measures the soluble salts in the root zone. Macadamia roots are easily stressed by high salinity. If your EC reading is consistently above 2 mSEMA, you are causing stress and triggering those VOCs.
And the optimal range is pretty narrow.
Very narrow. You want to be between 1.0 and 1.5 yellow mSEMers. If it's high, the farmer needs to stop using high-salt fertilizers immediately and maybe focus on leaching those salts with managed irrigation.
And what about the leaf sap EC?
That's the real-time ionic concentration inside the plant. A high leaf sap EC, say above 6 mSEMer, often suggests over-fertilization. There's a buildup of salt inside the tree, which is a big metabolic stress. On the flip side, a very low reading, below 2 mSEMer, suggests a broad nutrient deficiency.
Okay, and finally, we have to monitor the physical environment of the roots. Soil compaction.
Compaction is just a fundamental barrier to resilience. A healthy soil should be 50% pore space for air and water. When that gets compressed, usually by heavy machinery, root growth is restricted. The roots can't breathe.
They essentially start to suffocate.
They do. They can't access water or nutrients efficiently. We measure this with a penetrometer. Any reading that's consistently above 2,000 kPa means root growth is severely restricted, and that tree is highly vulnerable.
And the fix for that?
The immediate fix is physical relief. You know, aeration, deep ripping, subsoiling to break up that hard pan. But the long-term regenerative solution is planting deep-rooted cover crops. They act like natural biological tillers, constantly breaking up compaction and building stable soil structure for you.
So this all forms a very clear, actionable roadmap. Bricks and leaf sap EC checks frequently, bi-weekly, maybe weekly during critical times, and then soil EC and compaction quarterly.
Yes, and the tools for this, a refractometer, an EC meter, a penetrometer, they might be an initial investment, but they pay for themselves so quickly, often just by preventing one major over-application of a synthetic product.
We've talked about the physical and nutritional health that stops the stress signals. Let's move on to the biological defense system. You called the soil food web the orchard's immune system.
It really is. It's the ultimate unsung hero. We're talking about a microscopic army that's constantly cycling nutrients and actively defending the macadamia tree, fungi like Trichoderma and bacteria like Bacillus. They colonize the root zone, and they actively suppress pathogens like Phytophthora root rot.
They outcompete them or even attack them directly.
And then you have the arbuscular mycorrhizal fungi, or AMF, they're critical. They form this symbiotic relationship with the macadamia roots and dramatically extend the root system, sometimes by hundreds of times.
So they're like a massive root extension, helping the tree find water and nutrients.
It makes the tree so much more resilient to drought, and it vastly improves the uptake of nutrients that don't move well in the soil, especially phosphorus. A tree with a well-colonized root system is just inherently tougher.
It sounds like a natural, continuous vaccine system for the tree.
It is, and that actually leads to a technical concept called induced systemic resistance, or ISR. This is where certain beneficial microbes, like Pseudomonas fluorescens or Bacillus subtilis, they don't just fight pathogens directly, they land on the root, and they trigger the macadamia tree's own internal defense responses.
So the microbe is essentially giving the plant a proactive vaccine shot.
That is the perfect analogy. It flicks a switch inside the plant, turning on its defense systems, getting it ready to fend off a potential attack, and that makes the whole tree resistant, not just the roots.
Okay, so we need to be clear about the practices that actively kill this critical biological network. What are the big conventional mistakes farmers need to stop making?
Well, the biggest enemy is disturbance. Excessive tillage just physically shreds those critical fungal networks. They're the infrastructure of the soil food web. Then the overuse of synthetic chemicals, particularly high-dose synthetic fertilizers and broad-spectrum pesticides, they act like a biological sterilant. They just wipe everything out.
Kills the good guys along with the bad.
Exactly. Then there's monocropping. just macadamia trees and bare soil. It starves the soil of diverse food sources. A lack of plant diversity above ground leads to a lack of microbial diversity below ground. And finally, as we said, compaction. It kills the good aerobic microbes by cutting off their oxygen supply.
Okay, so knowing the enemies, what are the practical low-cost strategies that RegionMac Farms promotes to actually boost this biology?
The first step is to shift from feeding the plant with synthetic salts to feeding the microbiome. You start with organic amendments, high-quality compost, manure, even recycled macadamia husks. This provides the stable carbon that microbes need to thrive.
And then we get into the liquid applications, focusing on that fungal biology, which brings us to things like Johnson Sue compost extracts and compost tea.
Right. A key distinction in the regenerative approach is favoring fungal biology. It's slower to build, but it gives you superior soil structure and nutrient transfer. The Johnson Sue bioreactor is a specific way to create a highly fungal-dominated compost. And then a compost tea simply extracts those beneficial organisms into a liquid.
How does that work?
You basically steep high-quality compost in non-chlorinated water. You aerate it with an air pump for about 24 to 48 hours. And you feed the biology with a carbon source, like molasses, to get them to multiply like crazy.
But isn't making high-quality compost tea a bit tricky and time-consuming? How does a farmer know they're brewing the right biology?
That's a critical point. And it's why the RegionMac Farms approach always circles back to testing. Your biological soil analysis informs your compost recipe. If you know you have low fungal populations, you add more woody, high lignin materials to your compost pile before you brew the tea.
So you tailor the brew to your soil's specific needs.
You do. And yes, it takes time, but the cost per hectare is a fraction of synthetic inputs. It's an investment in biological equity.
There's also this really interesting proactive strategy of masking the orchard scent using fermented plant extracts, or FPEs. This seems like a brilliant, low-cost, defensive move.
FPEs are a core innovation. You create them by fermenting various local plants, often fast-growing weeds like comfrey, or even things like garlic and chili with activated effective microorganisms, EM and molasses.
But the main goal here is camouflage. How does fermentation create this olfactory mask?
The fermentation process breaks down the plant matter into these highly aromatic compounds. So when you spray this on the macadamia trees, the strong scents of, say, fermented garlic and chili actively mask those faint distress VOCs that the pests are hunting for.
So the pest just flies over the orchard because it can't smell the vulnerable tree. It's drowned out.
Precisely. The distress signals are just lost in the noise. It's a highly sustainable, non-toxic barrier strategy. It really reinforces that mantra. Keeping pests out is so much better than trying to kill them after they arrive.
Okay, we've outlined a really comprehensive data-driven shift here. It's exciting, but for a farmer who is under extreme financial pressure, this represents a huge risk. The natural objection has to be the transition dip, that period of instability, maybe even lower yields, as the soil weans itself off the synthetic inputs. How do you address that fear?
The fear of the transition dip is the essential objection. It's the one we have to handle with absolute precision. We don't deny the risk. Of course, there can be instability when you change systems, but we frame this dip not as some disaster, but as a managed investment in the farm's future. The goal is to minimize its duration and its severity.
And the key to minimizing that risk is acknowledging that context matters. This is not a cookie-cutter prescription.
Absolutely. Ignoring context is the real disaster waiting to happen. What works in a fertile coastal block is going to fail in a dry, sandy, inland block.
Can you give us some concrete examples of context dictating the strategy?
Sure. Think about climate. A farm on the KZN coast with high humidity, they have to prioritize drainage and suppressing fungal diseases. Their strategy might involve a fungal-like compost tea and managing the canopy for airflow, but a farmer inland facing drought.
They're all about water conservation.
All about it. They need to prioritize water-saving cover crops and adding massive amounts of organic matter to hold every drop of moisture. If that inland farmer just copies the coastal farmer and plants a high water demand cover crop, they'll cause a crop failure.
And soil type is just as crucial.
Of course. Sandy soils lose water and nutrients fast. Their transition has to be laser focused on continuous root growth and composting to build structure. Loamy soils, which are more stable, might be able to focus more quickly on just reducing tillage. It's all about tailoring the approach.
So the transition risk is managed through something you call adaptive management. Can you walk us through that? process?
Adaptive management means you phase in changes gradually, and you use the data pillars we talked about to guide you. You don't just overhaul the entire farm overnight. It's a three-step process. Start small, observe, and modify.
And what does start small look like in practice?
You pick one or two blocks, maybe 5 hectares. Those are your test zones. You apply the new practices there, your cover crops, your compost teas, your reduced synthetics, and you meticulously track the bricks, the EC, the yield on those blocks, and compare them to your control blocks.
You use them as a living laboratory.
A living lab to work out the kinks specific to your farm before you scale it up.
And how do you manage the input cost savings to offset that potential dip in yield?
This is where a tool like the Managed Investment Calculator from Region Mac Farms comes in. We calculate the cost of avoidance. For example, if a soil test shows you have excessive phosphorus, which is a common issue,
you could just stop buying it immediately.
Immediately. You eliminate the expensive P component from your fertilizer blend. That's a direct saving. We estimate the savings on nitrogen inputs alone, just by using cover crops and compost, can often offset a potential 5 or 10% yield reduction in those first couple of transition years.
It's about a phased, multi-year strategy.
Yes. Year one is mostly data gathering and starting your biological applications. Year two, maybe you implement cover crops more widely and reduce your nitrogen further. By year three, the biology is stabilizing, your plant resilience is up, pesticide use is down, and your yield is stabilizing or even exceeding what it was before.
It puts the farmer back in control. They're not just subject to the whims of the market.
Precisely. The goal isn't just to replace synthetics with organics. It's to build biological capital. And by managing it as an investment, we make the transition achievable and we reduce those expensive setbacks.
Okay, we've covered soil health and tree health. Let's shift to another critical point of profitability. And this is one where innovation and biodiversity offer huge returns. Pollination.
Mm-hmm. A huge one. Macadamia yields are so dependent on precise pollination during a very narrow window. The flower is only receptive for 2 or 3 days.
And the conventional method of just hiring honeybee hives is pretty vulnerable.
Incredibly so. You've got logistics, theft, high rental costs, and the big one, weather susceptibility. In KZN, especially during those cool, misty spring conditions, honeybees often just stay grounded. And that creates a pollination gap that can decimate your fruit set.
Okay, and this is where it gets really, really interesting. The research coming out of South Africa on the flies plus bees strategy, this seems like a total game changer. It's highlighting that true flies, specifically blowflies and hoverflies, are the reliable gap fillers that farmers need.
They are essential insurance. And the reason they perform better in marginal weather is all about their thermal regulation. Flies can start flying and foraging at temperatures 5 to 7 degrees Celsius lower than honeybees.
So on a chilly spring morning, the flies are out working.
Up to an hour and a half earlier than the first bee leaves the hive. That's a huge extension of your daily pollination window.
So you get this temporal handoff during the day, a continuous coverage.
Exactly. It creates a rolling 10 to 12 hour pollination relay. The hover flies surge in the mid-morning. The bees dominate the warmest part of the day. And then, critically, as it starts to cool down after 3 p.m., the blowflies, with their better cold tolerance, they maximize their visits.
And this biodiversity doesn't just give you more coverage, it can improve the quality, too.
It does. Flies, especially blowflies, have this erratic, zigzagging flight path. Researchers call it super ranging. And this pattern actually mixes pollen across rows and between different blocks more effectively than the more hive-focused bees.
So better genetic diversity in the nuts?
Better fruit set uniformity. And plus, your resident fly populations are self-replenishing. They provide this amazing buffer, even if your beehives get compromised for some reason.
Let's look at the hard data. The Zululand Coastal Orchard case study. The farmer here chose to create a biological habitat instead of just renting more hives. What were the specific interventions?
So the grower started 6 weeks before bloom on a 15-hectare block. The goal was to provide continuous food and breeding grounds for the local fly populations.
What was the floral runway part?
They sowed a runway of fast-growing nectar sources, mostly buckwheat and coriander, between every fourth tree row. This kept the adult hoverflies fed and living in the orchard right through the macadamia bloom.
And what about for the blowflies?
For them, they needed breeding habitat.
Yeah.
So they built these large, moist larval windrows on the edge of the orchard using shredded macadamia husks and banana stems. They turned the pile weekly to keep it just right.
And the results were, well, they were staggering.
They were. The fly captures on their sticky cards jumped fourfold. a 400% increase. And this was purely additive. It was complementing the existing B effort. The payoff was in the yield. Fruit said jumped from about 38% to nearly 49%.
And kernel recovery went up.
By 17%, which is huge for market access.
Okay, let's talk return on investment, tying this back to those high-pressure margins.
The total spend on seed, materials, and labor for this was under 5,000 Rand per hectare. That investment yielded an estimated extra 380 kilos of kernel per hectare. At current prices, that's an additional 28,000 Rand in revenue.
So an ROI of nearly 8.6 to 1.
In year one.
Wow.
It's a profound example of how a low-cost, biologically smart intervention can directly boost profitability in a way that just buying another expensive input never could.
But even natural solutions need precision. And that's the lesson from the Townley Estate Stink Station trial.
Yes, this is the essential lesson in context and timing. Townley tested using carrion pig offal stink stations to attract and breed blowflies. The pilot in 2022 was a success. But in 2023, they made a critical timing mistake.
Yeah.
A stagger misstep.
It was the misstep.
They baited their first blocks 3 weeks before bloom, which worked fine. But they delayed baiting the final block by 2 weeks. So when the first big wave of blowflies emerged from the early blocks, the carrion there was getting old and less attractive.
And the flies went looking for fresher bait.
Exactly. They instinctively migrated to the newly laid, fresher bait in the final block. So you get this diluted, inconsistent pollination in the early blocks. The lesson is that biological systems are dynamic. You have to maintain a continuous supply to keep them where you need them.
So the final simple takeaway for protecting these new allies.
It's simple. Spray smart. Spray late. If you have to use a broad-spectrum chemical, do it after 5 p.m. when the bees and most flies are done for the day. And always, always favor softer chemistries, like spinosad, that are less damaging to your beneficial insects. Protect your investment.
You know, this deep dive today, it really reveals a clear pathway out of the crisis that KZ and macadamia growers are facing. It's a massive shift, mentally and operationally.
Yeah, you're moving from being a reactive consumer of expensive products to a proactive manager of a complex biological system.
And that secures two core achievements. One, proactive tree health management using metrics like BRICS and SAP-EC. And two, building a self-sustaining, resilient ecosystem through soil biology and innovative biodiversity, like that amazing fly pollination strategy. And this transition isn't just about survival, is it? It's about building a competitive advantage, a legacy. What are the key economic takeaways a listener should have?
The most immediate one is significant, measurable cost savings. By making your plants more resilient and efficient, you drastically reduce what you spend on fertilizers, pesticides, fungicides. That directly tackles the margin pressure we started with.
And the quality payoff secures the long-term future.
Absolutely. A healthier tree produces higher BRICS nuts. And higher BRICS means better quality, better flavor, better oil content, longer shelf life. This allows farmers to stabilize their income, maybe access premium markets.
And you're building a legacy.
You're passing on a healthier, more profitable, and ecologically resilient farm to the next generation. You're building soil, conserving water, capturing carbon. It's a huge win.
So if a listener is ready to start this transition to turn their farm into a high BRICS, low vulnerability operation, where is the best place to go?
Redomac Farms is the central resource. It's the go-to hub for this transformation. They have the practical tools, the calculators, the case studies, the phased advice, everything you need to guide you on this data-driven journey.
You know, what really stands out to you? By adopting that philosophy, we don't guess, we test. The macadamia farmer fundamentally changes their own identity.
Mm.
They stop being just a caretaker of the land. They become a practical scientist, an ecologist, an innovator. They're making sure every single decision from the soil microbiome to a foliar spray is an informed, managed investment in their farm's future.
That's beautifully put.
Now, what element of your macadamia operation are you going to test next?